This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA. PenFed's got great.
Jeez, Dad, not the car again.
Oh, happens all the time with old Betsy.
Have you checked out Carvana yet? They have thousands of cars for under $20,000.
But do those thousands of cars have personality like old Betsy?
Betsy's held together by tape. And there are raccoons living in the engine.
Psh, it's a family car.
There are flames on the hood?
Ah, custom paint job.
No, Dad, the car's on fire.
How many cars did you say Carvana had?
Visit Carvana.com to shop thousands of cars for under $20,000. We'll drive you happy at Carvana.
Doesn't sound like the usual mindless, boring, getting to know you chit chat. This sounds like you actually have something to say.
Well, maybe.
Why are we having this conversation? What the hell am I doing here?
Now,
so you're a big jungle fan?
I love a bit of jungle, and not the curry kind. Just, you know, the music.
Do you go raving then?
Well, later in life I started going raving a bit. In my 30s is when I started raving.
You started raving in your
30s? Yeah. Because my 20s I was like, it was properly strict. Not strict. I had a mortgage.
Right.
So I
can't go to raves with a mortgage.
Yeah, you can't go to raves with a mortgage. And then eventually I'd paid off enough of my mortgage where I was like, I've got a bit of my mortgage left.
Yeah.
But enough that I can go out raving.
Yeah, that's what the mortgage advisor said. Yeah. We've had a look.
Yeah. You can go raving now. Congratulations, you paid off half of your mortgage to go raving.
Yeah.
Congratulations. So, yeah.
So, how did you find raving? Did you like the...
I loved it. I am, I guess, a little bit infamous amongst comedy circles, and at least, for being a great night out.
Well, first time I met you.
Yeah.
We were on a night out, weren't we?
Mate, we were on a night out looking at floors.
I don't think we actually spoke. It was more just like...
Just pointing at floors.
Oh,
look at that. Because I think there was a weird dude... He had his phone light on, flashlight, and he was just looking for something on the floor.
So we just sort of joined in.
We just sort of joined in helping him, not knowing what he was looking for.
We were just looking at expecting the floor.
Yeah. And then the rest of the evening, every time I saw you, we just point at the floor and be like, what do you think of this? And then today I came, we had a bit of a chat for the first time properly,
yeah.
And you told me your other job.
Yeah.
You're a carpenter.
Floor layer.
You're a floor layer.
Yeah, so I was like,
oh my God, it was a home game for you that night.
That's it, yeah.
So yeah, no, I like a night out. Friends of mine will say, when we know Ishan's coming, we prepare ourselves to go home at stupid o'clock.
Is that, oh, you're like, do you do this thing? Do you get to a point where you get like you get pissed enough that you're not going beyond that so you can carry on going. Do you know what I mean? Because if you keep drinking, like some people just drink themselves into oblivion where they can't carry on.
Oh yeah, well no, I can drink like non-stop till 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
But I don't get hangovers.
Fuck off.
I've never had a hangover.
Oh bollocks.
Fucking legend, bruv.
No.
Never had a hangover.
What do you mean?
I just don't get hangovers.
What do you get then?
Nothing. I just get a bit groggy.
That's probably just a hangover. That's
No, but it's not like I don't get a headache. I don't like have an existential crisis.
What are
I don't
you?
Get hangovers or calm downs.
It's like your superpower. Yeah. Like a shit member of a Marvel. Non-hangover man.
No hangover man. He stays out till 6 in the morning, not fighting crime. Just getting pissed while the city descends into chaos. And he wakes up the next morning and just carries on with his day.
Bloody good film, that.
Yeah. Where's the arc? There isn't one. It's just the same thing all the time. I don't get hangovers. I do a joke about it on stage. I guess I don't get hangovers because I say my liver is Muslim to the point of denial. Like I'll be drinking and my liver's like, no, nothing.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
It's saying inside you saying...
Because I think I started drinking quite late. I was like in my mid-20s when I had my first drink.
Yeah.
And when I started like binge drinking like a proper British wanker,
yeah.
I was in my late 20s, early 30s. So my liver has just been protected before that point.
Yeah. I'm thinking there's maybe part of you that's saying, look, I don't drink. I don't drink. And then even when you start drinking, say, I'm not going to have the normal reaction to drink.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe.
Because...
Yeah,
but then I, you know
and
I, mean?
I cannot wait to have my liver cancer fundraiser at some point. I didn't get a hangover, I just got cancer.
But this is the thing about a hangover, right? It's if you moan about it, it gets worse.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Do you know what I mean? It's if you're sitting there going, you just keep reminding yourself, I've got a hangover.
Because if you get a hangover, like, I know when I'm really tired, the moment I have a shower and I step out of the house, I feel fine.
Yeah.
But we end up moping in the house. We're like, oh, I'm going to cry and watch Bridget Jones or whatever people do when they're on a hangover. What do you do on a hangover?
That's just like that.
Bridget Jones,
a lot of wanking.
Yeah. Oh, can you wank on a hangover?
Well, you don't know, do you?
Yeah. I didn't think you'd be able to.
Yeah, then you find it doesn't help. And then just nothing helps. Do you know what I mean?
Is there enough power in the jizz for it to like really, dribble over your hands?
It's a really depressing.
It's
less of a wake. It's not like more than much. It's like blowing your nose.
Yeah, it's like it's like a volcano and its like final bitch just going.
One of those depressing wanks.
Yeah. Okay.
So where do you? You're from East London, aren't you?
East London, born and bred. Well, I say bred. Born East London, Whitechapel.
Yeah.
Bred in Essex.
Oh, Essex boy.
Proper mate. Fucking year. I don't know what that was. I grew up kind of Ilford, Seven Kings, that part of Essex. I live in Chadwell Heath now.
So how old were you when you moved to Essex?
Eight.
Oh, eight, okay. Yeah,
so first 8 years I was in like Forest Gate, proper East London.
So when you grew up...
I sound like it, don't I?
Yeah, yeah, you do. Yeah. But when you grew up in East London, because you know it's like now, it's very gentrified and that. So how old are you?
I'm 38.
38.
I know, I look amazing.
So,
although I have to say, can I just say, I'm very intimidated sitting across you because you're a very handsome man.
Oh, thank you, mate.
I think you're one of the most handsome comedians in the country, actually.
I don't know how to take a compliment, so I'm just going to...
I think goes...
The thing is, though, if someone does say that to you, what do you do? Because you can go, I'll stop it, and you look like a dickhead. And then you can just go, thank you, yes, I agree. There's no way out of that when people say...
No, you know what? I think I want more and more British comedians to just be like, I am handsome.
I wouldn't do that.
I'm not funny, but I am handsome. Yeah.
Cheers, mate.
I'm joking.
Oh, cheers. No, I was going to say, so in with East London, when you were growing up, was it like, it's not like East London now, is it?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. Like, my dad came to this country when he was 17 and he started driving minicabs illegally.
Where from? Where was he there from?
From Pakistan.
Right.
And he used to carry a meat tenderizer in his car because people wouldn't pay him.
Fucking hell.
Or they'd try and stab him, and he'd have to beat the shit out of them.
Fucking
this
hell.
This is in Canning Town.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when I was maybe late 20s.
Yeah.
One night I said to my dad, oh, Dad, I'm going out in Hackney. He's like, what? I said, I'm going out in Hackney. He goes, no, you're not. Yeah. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you can't. It's Stab Central. I'm like, it was.
Yeah.
It was. It's not anymore. And my dad's a paramedic. So when he does go to Hackney now, it's only because someone's been stabbed.
Right, yeah.
But he remembers it from when... I remember when the Canary Wharf Estate was just swamp.
Right, yeah.
It was just marshland. They didn't have any of the buildings. And there were just drug syringes everywhere. You didn't go to Shoreditch. Shoreditch, Shadwell, Hackney, Haggerston and Homerton,
yeah,
you did not touch with a barge pole until I was in my mid-20s.
Yeah, because I suppose it was all like West End then, wasn't it? Everyone goes to the West End for a night.
Yeah, everyone went to the West End for a night out. You did not go to Shoreditch.
Yeah, because I'm 35, so I think I remember I was of that. I think I was that first wave, let's go out in Shoreditch.
Right.
I think. Like, it was like Brick Lane and all that was like a thing to go and do, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Brick Lane was just where my mum would go and pick up her groceries, like Bengali groceries at the weekend. But to go out, you'd rather go to Romford.
Yeah, yeah.
And Romford's a shithole.
That's the thing as well. Because like, I was like you. So my first eight years of my life, I was in Croydon.
Yeah.
Right, which is a shithole. And
it still is. And
now it's worse.
Yeah, somehow.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Somehow.
It's got worse.
How?
I don't know how they managed that. But it's like, and even it was even that big, or like going, yeah, that's going to be the next gentrified sort of, it's still it, no.
Because they've got a passport office in Croydon, haven't they? They had a passport office in Croydon. I remember you had to go to Croydon. Yeah. There was one of the, because it was either Victoria or Croydon. And when you went to the passport office in Croydon, you saw all these, you know, all these amazing cultures, all these backgrounds in one place. But they were in Croydon. And you're thinking, you all fought to come here.
Yeah.
to get a passport. Really? What are we doing?
Exactly. Go back. I know when I lived in Australia, there's a place in Sydney called Croydon, and ironically, it's a shithole.
Is there?
They didn't give that place a chance, did they?
No. Why would you call it Croydon? I know, Jesus. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, East London now is, Stratford is unrecognisable from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Going to the market in the Stratford Centre before Westfield was there.
Because I even think like when, because that's what I'm saying, when I was like first generation of going there, it was still a bit, you have to keep your wits about you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A little bit like that. But then I was walking from one gig to another a while back, and all it was like middle class people with little dogs. And,
yeah, it's just like, bizarre. I've actually been mugged more in Islington than I have in East London. I've been mugged in Islington three times. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm from the East. What's happened?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah,
I think there's that thing, like when you're of an age, you're sort of, oh, we're going to walk around East London. You've got to be a little bit scared. And people who have no concept of it, who've just moved there, like, this is fine.
This is absolutely fine. Yeah. Everything's lovely. We've got a little bakery
here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm someone got stabbed in that bakery when I was a kid. Yeah, exactly. Percy Ingle in Stratford. There was actually a stabbing there once.
Was there?
Outside the Percy Ingle in Stratford.
It up.
Why are you getting stabbed over pastry? Like, what? What's happened in your
life? Fucking hell. That's a new low, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So are you living in Essex now, then?
Yeah, I live in Essex, Chadwell Heath, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's lovely. Yeah. We had 13 BNP councillors in 2010, and the EDL used to march over my road every Saturday.
Morning.
Just picking up some milk. What's that? Yeah, I am one. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I should go back to where I came from. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good point. Yeah, yeah.
See you next week, Andy. Same again, yeah.
Fuck it. Are they still about then?
They still knock about. There's a smaller group. One of the pubs, there's two pubs at the end of my road, and one of them was a real EDL hotspot, and that's shut down now. So they've, and the bar that they used to do it in, that's now like a cash and carry.
Yeah.
But they do meet now and then, and you just feel a bit sorry for them. Yeah, of course. Really.
That's a good way to look at it, though, isn't it?
Yeah. And the thing is, and I think I've spoken about this on different podcasts as well, I don't mind a bit of racism.
Do you know what? I had Andrew Mensah on here the other day, and he was saying, he does like, it's when people, like white people, they go to him, oh, I feel really bad for you that they haven't cancelled Little Britain.
Yeah, yeah.
They say that, and he goes, I don't give a fuck about Little Britain.
No, you know what? Okay, what I mean by that is like, particularly from my parent generation, overt racism like that, where people call you the P word or whatever it might be, doesn't really happen that often. But actually, I would rather.
Trying to grab all the groceries in one trip? Oof, not how you would have done that. You know sometimes less is more. Like when you drive less and save with the USAA annual mileage discount. USAA, get a quote today.
I every so often got beaten up or called the P word. I'd rather it didn't happen at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the choice between getting beaten up and being called the P word and bosses stopping me from getting promoted. Because there's an institutional level of racism. I'd rather every so often someone just bashes me across the head. Do you know what I mean?
That's a nice way to be.
I'm a very positive dude, mate.
There's an anti-racism. Will you just calm down a little bit?
My dad, you know, he'd been stabbed twice by the National Front.
Fucking hell,
right,
man.
So he was.
What, I bet your dad regretted coming here, though. After
he loves it.
All that meat cleaver in his cab, stabbed twice.
But he
You're doing all right, though.
I'm doing all right, though. Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, so he, you know, when he had to deal with that kind of stuff, and I've said this before elsewhere, the first time I got called the P word, I wrote an article for The Guardian. It's a bit of a different life, you know, altogether.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, it's funny, like, especially now in comedy, everyone gets so riled up about everything all the time. Yeah. Because I think I grew up in East London and I've seen the transition and what people are like. And actually, a lot of them, their heart's in the right place.
Yeah.
That what they know about non-white people comes from what they read and what they hear from their stupid mates.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's a bit like, there's a little bit of like, you have to have a little tolerance for ignorance, I suppose, don't you?
Yeah.
A little bit like,
tiny bit.
Yeah, just like, it's sort of, they're just not, it's not something they thought about. It's just that.
Yeah. Because a lot of these people, they live week to week.
Yeah.
They want to have enough money to go down the pub at the weekend. And if they're really mad, follow Billericay Town around the country to watch a bit of football. And then every so often, they'll just read that brown dude has done this. So I hold the clever people who are in charge more responsible.
Yeah,
because they're in charge of the narratives.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
I think, well, maybe there's a thing, because I reckon these racists are coming from, like, white places or multicultural places, and it's... Because you know what I mean?
The worst racism is from all white places.
All
multicultural
white
places. Like the multicultural places. Like my mum, she told me a story once. She was in Watney Market, which is near Stepney. And there were these, there was a fishmonger there and like a vegetable stall market guy. Yeah. And they used to call my mum the P word all the time.
Yeah.
Right? But they used to call her Mrs. P.
Right. I'll soften it a little bit.
Eventually, she earned enough respect to be called Mrs. P.
I'll leave it out. We're not going to completely not be racist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just say P.
Hey, yeah. We'll just leave it at that.
Have a little bit of tolerance here. Come on.
And then one week, a bloke walked past my mum, bumped into her, and called her the P word. And these two guys jumped the shit out of this
bloke. Oh, really?
Bloke,
yeah.
Beat the shit out of him, said Mrs. P.
Still doing it.
Yeah. He's not allowed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're ours. All right?
Yeah.
We've got you. If anyone said anything racist to you, we'll look out for you. Mum's like, you do realise you're calling me Mrs. P.
It's such a, like,
and they're like, yeah, but it's Mrs. though, isn't it? What's wrong with you? Do you want your fish or not?
Defending her because of racism whilst being racist. That's really...
Yeah.
So my mum's, I think your mum's emotions, I don't know how to...
No, but she was always like, do you know what? Their heart was in the right place. Like,
yeah.
Eventually for them, it just didn't become a thing and I didn't really mind it. And
but that's where the ignorance thing we were talking about comes into it. Do you know what I mean? Their heart's in the right place. It's just that lack of education.
Exactly.
Lack, yeah.
So I'm always... I think because I've grown up in that kind of environment, particularly in comedy now, I'm so much more relaxed about this stuff in a way that other comedians who look like me or are, you know, non-white...
Yeah.
They sometimes don't really understand it because, I don't know, maybe they didn't grow up in the place that I grew up in.
But they think it's more the white people overcompensating. Isn't that not?
So much of that.
Oh, that's the worst, isn't it? Because I think really, like, I'm like originally from Croydon, so it's just like, grew up in a multicultural, it's just a thing, you know what I mean? But it's the ones who haven't.
Yes.
And then, like, the way they deal with it
is
so awkward. It's Joan.
Yeah, the worst immigration to happen in the UK was the home counties white people moving into London.
Yeah.
Those immigrants are the fucking worst. Those stupid white Lotties and Felicities and Hugos coming here, setting up their stupid bakeries and just like being like, oh, one mustn't talk about race and whatever. Shut up.
I was thinking of doing a sketch about it and like doing like you could have like a non-white person, a white person. Because we're friends and we're just colleagues. Yeah, no, but now... I can call one my friend.
Friends.
Now.
Yeah, exactly.
We can say friends.
I know. Because they have no concept of it. And they're just like, this is why I hate gigging in Brighton.
Right.
It's one of my least favourite places to go because Brighton sells itself as a really diverse place.
Yeah.
Not very many brown people there.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a very white place.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember once I did a gig where I was like, I said this very thing that, like, listen, you're going to police what I say.
Yeah,
but this is one of the whitest places I've been to in the UK that sells itself as being liberal. Any brown people here are only here because their family don't like the fact that they're gay. And then some people got really upset with me.
This is a really triggering sentence. Yeah.
Like, there was one brown girl there. I was like, are you LGBT? She goes, yeah. I said, your family disowned you? She goes, yeah. I said, is that why you came here? She goes, yeah. So I know the experience.
Yeah.
And so those Brighton lot, with their green hair or whatever, just policing, like, oh no, don't be racist, don't be this.
Yeah.
Sometimes racism is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's really funny. If I go into a Chinese restaurant and Jack turns up, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing serving me? You can't cook this, fuck off.
Yeah. But that's how I've worked it out, because, like, you're using the word woke. When there's, I've seen a few people say woke just means you're compassionate. But no, it's compassionate. And I think woke is this sort of negative thing where it's this thing of you call yourself compassionate, but if someone has ideas that don't agree with yours, yeah, you wish bad things to happen to them. So that's not compassionate, is it?
No, it's not at all. By the way, whoever's editing this, can you just keep the bit where Jack says, I think woke is negative, and just clip that out?
Is that a bad thing? I don't know.
I've already tweeted it.
Things though, this is the thing I get away because I'm uneducated. Yeah, uneducated.
But I know what you mean. And do you know what? Bill Burr's got a really good bit about this where he says, he goes, woke is a good thing, but I blame black people for how white people have taken woke on, because it was a black person who would have said it at a party.
Yeah.
And a white person's like, I want to be that. Yeah. And they say it and they don't really understand it.
Yeah.
And what it means to be woke. But also,
because the word is compassion, though, isn't it? That's the one they're looking kind for. Of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, being aware of.
Because I just see so many people, Nate, like relishing in
their wokeness.
In people failing who aren't. Do you know what I mean? If you're that compassionate, you should be open and just be like,
yeah, absolutely.
Let people just do their thing. Whatever, like we were just talking about there, about the ignorance of racism or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You can look at that and go, oh, you're just a fucking idiot.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't want pain or hurt.
You don't want anyone to be affected by
it.
Absolutely. I think there's this thing of like people patting themselves on the back for just like knowing.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, did you know colonialism was bad? And you're like, I mean, yeah. what do you want? Yeah. Whereas, so then, when I'm on stage, I've got a whole bit about why I think British colonialism was great.
Right.
And people get really upset. But, you know, I'm trying to do comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to be...
That's the whole idea.
That's the whole idea. I don't want you to agree with me. I want you to laugh. So, it's a strange thing. I can't believe we started talking about this. How did we get into this? It's me. Bloody Ishan Akbar talking about race again. Yabba, yabba, yabba.
But the thing is, it's always... I talk about... working class too much. I'm starting to talk about it too much. I keep saying it too much. And every time I say
that's interesting.
I think, am I saying this too much now?
But this is it. Interesting, isn't it? It's like, I posted a video of, I can't remember what video it was, a couple of days ago. And it was on TikTok. By the way, TikTok is hell on earth in terms
of
comments. Yeah. But the comments that people make, someone goes, can you post a clip where you don't mention race?
Right.
And I had plenty of clips before that where I didn't mention race at all.
Right.
And it does happen that the moment someone like me mentions race, it's like, oh my God, here he goes.
Yeah.
Someone like you goes about working class, someone will go, oh.
Yeah.
But no one ever notices that if you're Scouse, you bloody talk about being Scouse.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're Geordie, you'll do a Geordie accent.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about what they know.
That's it, because this is just in your...
It's your wheelhouse.
It's like when I'm writing material, I can't help talk about being like a dad, say, because it's my life.
It's my life. I can't go on stage and be like, look, let me tell you what's tough about being Chinese. I fucking hate it. People are like, what? Do you know what I mean? It's just so ridiculous. Because even in Edinburgh, there was one year where I had two reviews in the same show.
Right.
One reviewer said, Ishan Akbar talks about race too much. Next reviewer said, he doesn't talk about race enough.
What are you going to do? Yeah.
I don't know what you want me to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about fucking water bottles.
Yeah.
Well, Asian people.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's what I'm trying. I get this as well. I did a TikTok sketch about working class dads. Yeah. About there, we do this thing. Like, go and get yourself a trade. No matter what you want, if you want to do something, go and get yourself a trade first.
Yeah, so 100%. Which I agree with, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. But it's more, I don't think I got the joke across the right way. It's more like that sort of, so the thing I'm saying, because the thing you do want to be in life will fail.
I've got such a funny story on this front, right? My brother's friend, John. Yeah. My brother went to a state school in Dagenham called Robert Clack. And John got a place at Cambridge University to do maths. 4 A-stars, right? Gets a place at Cambridge University. He goes to Cambridge, lasts about 2 weeks. He comes back home. Yeah. He says to his dad, I left Cambridge. I've deferred my entry because I can't deal with Cambridge University. I'm a working class boy from Dagenham. His dad goes, oh, don't worry about it, son. Go down Barking Dagenham College. They've got a few courses down there you can do. And John's like, I don't think you understand what's happened.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
He's like, you know Cambridge University? Yeah. He goes, it's a bit far away, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's just such a working class mentality. He doesn't understand.
It's like my dad, I told the story last week, so I'll repeat it, but it's like, my dad don't understand what I'm doing. He's supportive, but he don't know what, like,
this is.
It took me ages to come out to my dad as a comedian.
Comedian, right.
Because
okay.
It's like, we doing up on next stage. But he's not like that. But that's how I felt he would be.
Right.
Because it's sort of, I think you get a little
what
bit.
What's your dad do?
He's a black cab driver.
Right, okay.
So he's like, but he's.
So you got a black dad?
His cab is black. His cab identifies as black.
He's got a cab of colour.
I sort of kept it a secret for ages.
Well, you're really, like, right, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, he was supportive when he found it. But even he hasn't ever come and see me. I don't know. You just sort of don't talk about it. It's one of them.
Right.
I don't know. It's weird for me to be doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
of course.
I just think there's, I think personally, I don't know if people agree with me, but like, there's a little element of being working class where it's like, stay in your lane.
100%.
Stay. You don't get idea. Because when I took me ages to do stand up comedy, right? Because my head, it was a negative. It was the wrong way to look at it. But my head went, it's not for people like me. These people have been to drama school. These people have
gone to Oxbridge.
And that's all I saw.
Yeah.
And then it was seeing like people like Mickey Flanagan at the comedy store. Like, this was like about 2009, something like that.
Right.
It made me go, oh shit, he's like my dad's mate.
Yeah, he's
Michael
Green, yeah.
And I never really saw that.
Yeah.
And that was that moment of thinking, oh fuck, maybe it took me like literally 10 years to even get up on a stage. Because I just, every time I'd think, I want to do this, part of my brain would go, no, you can't do it.
You know what I love about what you just said there is, you know, as someone who is like a brown person who happens to do comedy, I get drawn into these debates, kind of conversations around representation all the time.
Right.
And why it matters. And I'm not one of those people that really cares about it that much.
Yeah.
Like, and I know that perhaps sometimes people might say, I get stuff because I'm brown. I'm not. Let's step up to the mic and see why I get stuff.
Yeah.
But you saying that you saw Mickey Flanagan, a working class bloke, and even before you even thought about doing comedy,
yeah,
a part of you was like, oh, I see something in
in
him. And it's the same for whether you're Asian, a woman, lesbian, whatever. Yeah. Representation does matter.
Yes, mate.
Like, someone will see me, overweight Bengali Pakistani guy,
yeah,
who's, and look at me and go, I did not know this was a possibility.
Yeah.
Even in a world like this. And so it heartens me that you saw someone like Mickey.
Yeah, it's not, and you can sort of hopefully pass it. Like, that's why I still like doing videos in my van.
Yeah.
Like, if people are thinking, do it, like, they're just, I'm just a bloke with a van who just happens to make videos. You know
absolutely
what I mean? And it's like, you can do it. It's just, you've got to get rid of that part of your brain that goes, nah, people it's like
not
me.
Because also, you know, in working class communities or ethnic communities or whatever, I don't know whether there's this, not sense of shame, but maybe in more working class communities, there's a sense of like, people will take the piss.
That's it.
And you're worried about that.
That's it. It's 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I remember and my brother is probably my most supportive person, right? Yeah. I've sort of blocked him so he couldn't see what I was doing because I just...
So nervous of him taking the piss out of you.
Yeah, but he never would. He was so supportive, but just this thing in your head going, because it is a working class thing. If you walk into a pub with a new haircut,
everyone's like, you're going to get a wanker. It might be a perfectly nice haircut.
That's all it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Whereas I think with Asian communities, the shame thing plays a big part.
Yeah.
Like, people are worried about what other people will think, and it's not the piss taking, it's the they will shame you for it.
What would you mean? How do they shame
like, you? They'll be like, doing comedy for me in one side of my family is a shameful thing because, you know, I was a banker. You know,
right.
I should be doing those kind of jobs.
They was proud then?
Yeah.
They're proud now?
No.
Really?
Not that side of the family.
Fucking hell.
Just a bit like, what the fuck is he doing?
Fucking hell.
Like, they would introduce me to other family members, but like, he used to be a banker. Like, quit that 15 years ago. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what's he doing now? Don't worry about it.
No, don't worry about it. Yeah, doesn't matter. Nothing. And even if I do stuff on TV, it's not in their wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
So to them, it just seems like a shameful thing. And where it comes from, and this is such an interesting story. I've not really talked about this anywhere else. So you're getting an exclusive. So one day I was talking to my uncle on my dad's side. So my dad's side are Pakistani.
Yeah.
I'm talking to my uncles on my dad's side, and I asked them about castes. So castes are these things that happen in South Asian communities where you're kind of like a farmer or a carpenter, or, you know, that you come from that family.
Right. Okay.
But in Pakistan, that's not really. It happens a lot in India.
Right.
But it doesn't really happen in Pakistan, right? So I one day just said to my uncle, "By the way, do we have castes? Because I've heard that Pakistanis have castes." And he goes, "Yeah, we do, but we don't talk about it." So I was like, okay, what is it? And he goes, well, your great-great-great-grandfather put a stop to it. So we're not associated with a caste anymore, but we used to be. So I said, okay, well, why is that? And he goes, well, he was very embarrassed of the caste. And so he said that we would retrain as carpenters, and then eventually people would become doctors, lawyers, as you earn more money.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, well, what was the caste? And he said, well, the caste, they were called Mirasis. I said, okay, and what are the Mirasis famous for? What do they do? And he goes, well, they're singers, actors, comedians, and musicians. Ah. So I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, so back in the day, what would happen is if there was someone's getting, if there's a wedding happening or a celebration, Mirasis would go there and sing or entertain, and people would chuck money that way. And it was a kind of like a, it was seen as a high class form of begging.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah.
You've got a talent.
Yeah.
Not all singers are respected in South Asia. Yeah. Right? It's often seen as something that you do, like a, we might look at a busker here maybe.
Yeah.
But something you do and people chuck money your way and that's it, fuck off. So my great-great-grandfather was so embarrassed by this that he just didn't want any association with it. Go forward four generations, this knobhead...
Well, there you go.
Get us a microphone and start selling jokes on stage for money.
This is the storyline to the Pixar film, Coco.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? Have you not seen it? That's what it is.
Is that what it is?
He's a singer.
Yeah.
And his great great grandfather banishes it or something.
Oh right.
And then he's like, why do I love doing music? Then he finds
that's
out.
That's what. Is that what the fuck? You've taken my story away from me. I had no
it's
idea.
It's been done, mate.
Oh my god. Honestly, when he told me, I was like, I'm going to be a millionaire.
I reckon. Was it your uncle? Was it
my uncle? Yeah.
I reckon he just seen that film.
Yeah, maybe I'm getting fucking punked right now. That is fucking annoying.
And his other uncle lifted a house off the ground with loads of balloons.
Yeah. I've not seen Coco. But yeah, no, so that's, apparently that's the story, but now I've just been told that my uncle's probably fucking shitting me.
Nah, I think that's, it makes sense, though.
I then looked up, the Mirasis do exist.
They do.
And some of my favourite singers are from that cast, so we might even be related, so that's mad.
There you go, man. That is a good story.
I can't
you can't sell that script now.
No, I can't sell that script. Maybe I can do an Asian version of it.
Yeah.
Do that bit. Rip it off. Why not? Fuck it. Let's do that.
Right, should we get into some questions?
Yeah, go for it, man. We've had loads of questions.
We really like to soften you up and then we'll ease you into some questions.
Oh, yeah.
Just, have you ever been caught shagging?
Yes, I have. I've been caught shagging by my dad.
Oh, I feel sorry for your dad's life.
he's had a good stabbed. Life.
He has to beat people. Go, no, he's seen his son shagging. Yeah. So
it was, oh, man. So some of your listeners might know that I've got a hearing impairment.
Right.
So I wear a hearing aid. And I've got two caught shagging stories, actually. Right. Not both of my dad. I've actually also caught my dad shagging.
Fuck. But has he got a hearing impairment?
No.
He's got no excuse.
Yeah, no excuse. Which one do you want? Me catching my dad out?
Whatever. Whatever you want to do.
Okay, I'll do a few of them. Whatever. Yeah. So I was having the sex with this girl in my bedroom, and it was quite vigorous, and my hearing aid fell out.
Right.
But you still got to keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were doing the doggy style.
I know what that is.
Classic.
Heard of that.
Classic position.
Yeah.
I was behind her.
Yeah.
And at one point, the girl I was having sex with goes, "What was that?" And I was like, "Probably my ball slapping again." She's all right, Karen. And she carried on, and then all of a sudden...
That's a weird thing to say. What was that? you're not really into this, are you? It's like listening to Next Door's television. Yeah,
that Holmes and the Hammer. I'm thinking of Lemmings, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm having sex, and then all of a sudden the door swings open, right? And... it was just an instinctive reaction. And if there's any women that listen to this pod, they're going to be so annoyed with me. And I apologize unreservedly for what happened next, right? Door swings open. My dad walks in. I got the duvet and covered myself. And there's a butt naked woman on all fours.
You might not know I'm here.
And my dad just started kind of looked towards me, and I could just see him from under the duvet that stares at me, looks at her.
He just stayed there as well. He didn't go, "Oh, sorry."
He just frozen.
Yeah.
He didn't expect it. And then he just like closed the door and walked off. And the girl just burst into tears immediately. While all this was happening, I was still inside her.
You're there like a big sexy ghost. Yeah. Big sheet over. Yeah.
Big sexy ghost. With an ever decreasing penis inside this woman, waiting for it to just. And then she turned over just in tears, going, "I'm so embarrassed."
Yeah.
And I was like, "But do we finish?"
Yeah. I
was like, no.
So.
And we didn't see each other again.
Oh, don't blame your dad for that.
Yeah, but a fucking cock block.
Literally
cock block.
Yeah.
So I've been caught by my dad. The other time that I got caught, and this was actually a much sexier one.
Oh, okay. That was pretty sexy the last time.
It was always quite sexy.
Yeah, the sexy life.
This is during my banking days.
Is that banking, you said?
Well, yeah, it was banking.
Sorry.
My house is banking.
Cheap.
Classic! So during my banking days, and me and this girl met in a pub in Canary Wharf, and we hit it off that night. Right. And, you know, banking is a very stressful environment. Right?
Yeah, I imagine.
And we just got chatting, and it somehow became clear that we were going to have sex that night. And I thought I'd be going to her place. But the passion overcame us. And underneath West India Quay Station, as a DLR was above us, we started shagging.
Yes.
Right?
Sorry, I got too into that.
You're like, yeah! Suddenly you just hear.
Keep going.
Who's that, Jack?
This podcast slowly turns into an erotic novel.
Yeah, I know. So we're having sex, and it was great. It was wonderful. And for some reason, all the worst things happen to me when we're doing doggy. So we're doing doggy.
You like that as your favourite?
It's not my favourite. It's just one of the positions, one of the seven I do on rotation.
Right, yeah.
Like a meal plan, you know. So we're doing doggy, and then the estate, like, so on Canary Wharf, along all the estates, they have like an estate person, just it's like a security person walking around.
Right.
Security person comes around the corner and he notices us, and it was one of the hottest things that's ever happened in my life. She looks at him and goes, "If you don't say anything, you can watch."
Jesus Christ.
Right?
You had no say in this.
I had no say in this. Because I've stopped. Unfortunately,
he was looking for a duvet.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I came unprepared for this situation.
You carry around in the backpack.
Imagine. I get stopped and searched because of possible Muslim terrorism. What's he got in his rucksack? A bed sheet? Right. Doesn't matter. So he goes, "You can stay and watch." And the guy was like, "What?" And she goes, "You can watch."
Bloody hell, mate. We're in this little studio here, in this little kinky story.
Yeah.
I'm hard.
Yeah, so he's rock hard. And he was like, "You're all right." And so we just carried on having sex. And then,
wow,
because she just had her skirt lifted up, I mean, she's one of the hottest women. Oh, my. Anyway, I'm getting hard now thinking about
this
it.
This is getting intense.
And then she really took control of the situation. She was a very powerful banker. She goes, "Both of you boys deserve more." So she just like pulled down her top.
Jesus Christ.
And I just had sex with her.
It's so graphic.
I know.
I wasn't expecting
this. Then I came really hard.
I love the conversation before. We were talking about Pixar movies.
You brought up the Pixar movie. Basically, Pixar movies make me horny. Right.
Jesus Christ. And then, so he did stay. He just stayed.
He stayed.
Bloody hell.
He stayed, watched.
Then called police.
Yeah. And then I spent two nights in jail.
So
that's the other time I got caught shagging.
What about your dad?
Well, he wasn't there.
I thought you said you caught your dad.
Oh, yeah, I caught my dad, twice, actually.
He was a security guard.
Yeah. he had a meat tenderizer in his hand. Yeah. That was just for his own meat. Ah, lovely little callback there if you've listened to the whole episode. First time I was 6 years old, I flew back from Bangladesh. I was in my bedroom. I couldn't get to sleep. I was jet lagged. I walked into my parents' bedroom, and as you walk in, the bed is to the left with the headboard against the wall on the other side.
Yeah.
And all I could see was my dad's balls ploughing into my mum. And I didn't know what it was. I thought they were having a fight.
That's it. You can watch.
I won't tell anyone. And then eventually he got his tits out.
Fuck's sake. God. Oh, God. I think we need a palate cleanser. Jesus Christ.
But also, wait, the second time I caught him.
Right, oh, but there's more.
Wait.
There's more.
The second time
this
I caught
so
him.
It's so X-rated now, this podcast.
The second time I caught him, it was in Pakistan. I turned around. We were in, like, the family bedroom. It was, like, three beds put together. I turned round, and I was about 10, and I kind of had a sense that they were doing something. But my dad was shagging my mum. And then 9 months later, my brother was born.
Oh, there you go.
So there. I was there for the conception of my brother.
That's sort of nice.
I saw...
That's the nicest of the four stories. Yeah.
Well, is it? I saw the jizz that my brother was climbing into my mum.
Jesus Christ. My mum actually listens to this podcast. Oh, I'm going to tell her.
I'm so sorry. So sorry, Auntie Skipper.
Oh, right.
Neck.
Jesus Christ. We're going to go with... What should we go with? Because they're all pretty bad, aren't they? There's no way back from this now. We're in it now, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. We're here now.
We should have covered drinking.
Are you glad you asked me this question?
Yeah, no, I really regret it, so that's good. That's good. Well, you were saying before, though, I was going to say, what's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you, but you reckon you don't get embarrassed. Well, yeah. You've just proven that.
Yeah, I don't. I honestly don't. I've got this... It's a weird thing in my psyche. Since I was a kid, I never ever really got embarrassed by anything, because it was just like, oh, that's happened. Oh, well, funny.
You're like a Zen guru type guy.
Yeah, I remember, like, I was 12 years old and we had a school trip to a farm and I fell through, like, this sewage hole.
Right.
But I was too fat, so I didn't fall all the way through. I just got wedged. And they had to, like, try and, like, lift me out and wait for a pop sound. And I got wedged in this... There was cow shit everywhere. And everyone's like, you're so fat, you can't even fall through a fucking hole.
Not embarrassed.
And I was like, well, I didn't fall in, did I? Surely that's a better outcome.
What would it take to... I'm saying it, though. You did throw a sheet over your head. There must have been a bit of embarrassment there.
I think it was just instinctive.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't even feel embarrassed about it afterwards, because surely my dad would be like, oh, my son's shagging.
Yeah.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never...
What would it take?
Honestly, I don't know. Very few things embarrass me. If anything.
Do you know the feeling of him?
Kind of. Honestly, Jack, it's weird.
No embarrassment, no hangovers.
Yeah, I'm a weird dude.
Yeah, that is weird, man.
I'm a weird...
It's like not a bad thing to not... All the bad things you never have.
Yeah,
that's
well...
Weird, isn't it?
I mean, I've got a porn addiction.
Is that bad? You're not embarrassed by it.
No, I'm not. I've watched porn before I came out today.
On the big screen.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, on the train.
Some classic stepmum stuff.
Have you been watching? I've asked you before. Watching Dharma.
No, you asked me. I've not watched it.
Oh, have you been watching it, Jonathan?
The Murderer.
Everyone's talking about this.
To home, and it gives me idea.
How many murders have you done? Oh, right, yeah.
Man, that is.
Is it?
It's
I do.
Up.
I love a true crime documentary. That is one thing I absolutely.
It's
adore.
Nice. It's a drama.
Oh, is it not true crime? It's like
no. It's a true story.
Oh,
it's like a
Jeffrey
biopic.
Dahmer.
Yeah. Yeah, biopic, there you go.
Biopic, correct.
But it's Jesus Christ, this guy.
Is he?
He
Inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah. 17 innocent men murdered.
Well.
Dismembered.
Innocent in what regard?
Oh, is it? Well, they didn't want to die.
Oh, right, yeah. What definition?
I'm not up for this whole dying thing.
Yeah.
I come up with the bumming, but I was...
Thing is, I've not watched the documentary yet.
Yeah,
and biopic. Yeah. I've not watched it, and a lot of people are, you know, whatever, about it, sad about it, and they're saying you can't get past the first episode or something. It's pretty graphic.
Yeah, well, there's a bit because basically what he does, he's a gay guy. He goes.
So Jeffrey Dahmer's gay.
Yeah, yeah. Right. He goes out to gay clubs.
Yeah,
and gets other gay guys back. Yeah. He says he's going to take photos of them.
Yeah,
And then he drugs them. I'm ruining the story. Like, this out there, it's general knowledge, isn't it? But that he does. He strangled them and then. Beheaded them and took the limb and cut them up and took photos and all that sort of thing.
Wasn't there an Indonesian dude who did this recently in Manchester?
Was that?
Do you remember this? No. This happened. There was a gay guy in Manchester. I think it was from Indonesia or some similar part of the world like that, who was doing something very similar, drugging gay men and raping them. I don't think he beheaded them though.
But there was a bit where you find out the last guy where he failed it because he didn't drink the drink. The guy sussed that there was something in the drink. He's like, this is gonna like the state rape thing.
Yeah,
and so he's trying to get his way out of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you wanted to take photos. You got a knife to him as well, but you wanted to take photos. So then this guy sort of starts doing this sexy erotic dance to sort of distract him. What a time to have to do a sexy dance.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? When you know you're about to get spiked. Yeah. But here's the thing, like, It's obviously horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be a serial killer, it's pretty hard.
It is hard. But then I think this program is proving that it's the upbringing. There's just, like, you ain't got kids, have you?
No. Not that I know of.
There is a little part of you when you're watching things, that you go, have I done anything that'll mean my son might be a serial killer? Because when you watch
really?
These things, look, you watch these programs, not that he acts like he, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Like, he's a good kid.
Good kid.
Boy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like,
they often are, though.
Just shows like how you little things, like this guy used to do, his dad, he done it because his dad was like a scientist, he used to go and pick up roadkill with him and do biology with him.
Yeah, yeah. Fucks with his head.
Yeah, yeah. It would do as a kid, though, wouldn't it? Do you know what I mean?
So do you think that all the serial killers we've ever had, they've just have fucked up upbringings? Like, that's what's happened. Do you think what's happened?
What do you think, Jonathan? Do you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Really?
You get so traumatised that you have to project your trauma onto other people by, like, slicing them up. So it's kind of real.
I think.
Some people might just be douches. I don't know.
Because it is. Do you watch them, like, serial killer documentaries?
Yeah.
Like that? Crazy, aren't they? Like,
I want to work out who, like, the most well-raised serial killer is.
That's a good one. Yeah, had a really, no excuse.
Yeah,
just
fancied
wrong.
It.
Yeah, because you could, that nature nurture thing, isn't it?
Nature nurture thing. But also, I do feel like serial killers don't get the respect they deserve.
What do you mean?
Because like, it is very hard to be one. You've got to be physically quite strong.
Yeah.
And to dismember a body.
Yeah.
You've got to.
And also, it's one of the things where like it's a lot of effort. You know, like something halfway through doing something, you're like, oh,
why am I doing this? You're a content creator. There's all these elements. Like, he's got. Okay, first he's got to meet them.
Yeah.
Then he's got to, you know, date rape. That's not good, right? He rapes them.
Yeah.
Right? It's probably the worst thing about the whole
thing. And sometimes you feel really bad after you've ejaculated, anyway.
Yeah,
so
and after that.
You've got to deal with that. You've got to clean all that up now. Like,
the energy.
Yeah.
You know what it's like? After you come,
yeah.
You don't want to do anything for like a good 2 days. But this guy.
He's got to chop up a body.
He's doing butchery.
Fuck's sake.
And he's making sure no one else knows. And he's out to do it again. That is commitment.
But I think this is
work ethic.
You see a lot with these things, though, is the police blunders, isn't it? Because apparently his house stunk of rotting corpses.
Yeah, of course.
And he just still weren't getting caught. Just still like
that's mad, isn't it?
That's crap police work.
That is awful police. What's that smell? Like yogurt.
Yeah. Like, you know what I mean, come on.
This is unacceptable.
You can do better than this.
No, I do want to watch it though because I'm into them. But it's because it's a biopic. I don't know if I'm going to be as into it. I really love a proper true crime documentary.
Oh, the proper documentary. Yeah. Yeah, what's your favourite one?
Making a Murder is a bit of a cliche one, but I really like that. The Staircase was good. There was the one which was, I can't remember what it's called, but it was a really weird one where they got a neck bomb on a dude and they sent him into the bank.
Oh, sounds good.
And then his neck, like the fucking face blew up. They got it on camera.
Yeah.
And then there was a whole web of people involved. And they're trying to work out why this random dude, just a normal bloke, they picked him to do it. He was just a pizza delivery guy. And then he delivered the pizza and they put a bomb on his neck and said, right, you're going to the bank.
Fucking hell, what's that called?
I can't remember what
it's
called.
We'll look it up. We'll just Google it. We'll find it.
It's really, really good.
We'll find it. But have you ever met someone where you think serial killer vibes?
Jack Skipper.
Oh, been caught
it
out.
Rhymes with Jack the Ripper.
It does.
So that's why.
It does.
No. Yeah, of course I have.
You get that vibe, don't you? Do you know what I mean?
You get a vibe of someone who's just a bit weird, and then you're like, oh, I wonder if he needs an apprentice. I'm in that mood now. It's obviously horrific. By the way, because I get it, it's on the internet.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear. I, Ishan Akbar, fundamentally disagree with serial killers.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's that into it. I think it's very niche.
Yeah, I don't. It's
market.
Not, I don't think it's good to kill people.
No, I don't. Just put it out there. What? Just so people are clear.
Yeah, because you know what the internet's like. Yeah. I don't think you should be going around killing multiple people.
Nah.
Is there a reason you might, though? What if multiple people hurt your kids?
Yeah, that's it.
Fucking kill him.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I was thinking, like, a good idea for a movie, right?
Yeah, as well.
Like a pedo killer, vigilante type bloke.
That's such a working class thing to say. All the pedo hunters are proper working class scumbags
but like,
as well.
Like murderers, though. You know what I mean? Because they'd be like, it'd be this bittersweet type. Who's he killing? Pedos.
The pedo hunter.
Yeah, yeah.
To dog the pedo hunter.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good film.
That is a good film.
So you heard it here first.
Yeah, and then he finds out four generations ago, his dad was a pedo hunter.
There you go. There's a film written there. There you go. There you go.
So get in touch with us.
Pixar.
No, Pixar will love that.
Did you watch The Pedophile Hunter?
No, I didn't.
I didn't watch it. Well, I had high hopes for it because of the crocodile hunter. That's good, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if there's anything like...
Yeah.
Is it like that?
No. Imagine
if we got a beauty!
Oh, my God. He's great. He's big and everything.
He's a wriggler.
Fuck you, no. Right. Have you ever shit yourself?
Yes. Now, one thing I'm very proud of is the regularity of my bowel movements. Once a day, every day in the morning, first thing.
Lovely. I'm the same.
Tell me, brother. First thing I do. Lovely stuff. I was in Edinburgh, this is my debut year, 2016. And I had been doing a lot of alcohol drinking.
Yeah.
And a lot of substance taking.
Right.
In my time there. I was having a lovely time in Edinburgh. Yeah.
On a quick side note, so your family aren't strict Muslim family?
Well, they're Muslim in name, but they're not like, they don't...
So you haven't got to hide any, well, you're doing a podcast.
Well, I don't drink in front of my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really tell him that I do this stuff. Like, why would you?
Yeah.
I don't think my parents...
It's like a blind eye.
Yeah, he probably turns a blind eye. He's seen me piss before, but he doesn't really...
He's got enough on his plate with his whole meat cleaver and fucking seeing his son shagging.
Yeah.
All this weird cheese.
He just sits there shaking, just remembering all the trauma from his life.
You know, Ishan had a beer. Oh, fuck. Oh, yeah.
Fine.
It's the least of my troubles.
Least of my troubles, exactly.
Sorry.
So I think I was like 5-6 days of not sleeping very much and just like drinking too much and having too much fun. And the room I had, you came in through the door. That's how rooms work.
Yeah.
And then
one of them rooms.
Yeah, one of them ones. Yeah, quite different. Alternative. Up and coming comedian.
I know the ones.
So I go through the door and then the audience and then it's the stage and then the backstage, right?
Right.
I'm backstage and 3 minutes before, I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And I was like, the only way to get out is through the audience.
Yeah.
It's 3 minutes before the show starts.
How long were you doing?
An hour.
Oh, fucking hell.
So suddenly I ran out holding my ass and I was going and walking at the same time, but I was holding onto my boxers to make sure it didn't trickle down my jeans. Right. So as I came out, this is the worst bit. Audience saw me. They were like, "Hey!" I'm like, no, we've got 3 minutes. We've got 3 minutes. The turret in the Gilded Balloon ran out, turned right, go into the toilet just by the loft bar. I capture all the shit in my boxers. Wrap it up, hide it behind the toilet, get toilet paper, just wipe down, clean up as much as I can. I did not feel clean because I usually wash. I always wash my ass. I never use toilet paper.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
B-day.
Yeah, like a B-day type thing. Very good.
All right.
So I didn't feel clean anyway, so I wiped it down, went back into the room.
What was the trousers like? The trousers were okay?
Were just about okay. Yeah, I mean, there was probably some sprayage, but there were black jeans.
There you go.
Fine, I'll be all right. So now walk back in through the room.
Smell of shit.
I know. Walk back in through the room.
Yeah.
And again, they're like, like, no, we've got 1 minute. And then I introduced myself on stage and did an hour.
Yeah?
Just about pulled off an hour.
I said no one.
No.
There was no one.
And then I didn't live too far from where I was. I didn't live too far from the venue. So I went back to my...
Yeah.
Got a carry bag, took the shitty boxer out of the back of the toilet, went back to my house, had a shower and then...
There you go. It's fine. That was a lucky escape, though.
Lucky escape, but that was fucking scary. I was shitting in the middle of an audience.
I like everyone going,
yeah. They're like, hey! Like, this is making me more anxious. I wasn't embarrassed.
What is it? Was a bit of food poisoning?
I know. I just think it was just lack of sleep and like drinking too much.
Right, yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Drinking too much, going out, not sleeping enough, and just shat myself.
There you go. Not embarrassed. Not embarrassed to say it.
No. So if you were there, August 2016, and you're in the audience when you saw me run in 3 minutes, I was shitting myself. But thank you for coming.
That's quality. So, the future. What's the future holding, man? You just done Live at the Apollo?
Yes, I filmed it a couple of weeks ago.
How'd it go?
Really good. I did the Christmas episode.
Oh, nice.
To be honest, it couldn't have gone any better. I was very, very happy with it. It's a nice thing to tick off.
So how long do you have to do?
20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
So filmed Live at the Apollo. That's coming out in December. I've got a couple of episodes. I've got Celebrity Mastermind and QI coming out later in the year.
Yes.
I've recorded those. I'm going on tour with Dan Nightingale for the rest of the autumn, winter season. And then my own tour starts in February.
Wicked.
Which is all over the country. So go to ishanakbar.com/tour to find out where I am. And I'm filming something. Like, I've got a couple of filming things here and there everywhere. Yeah, yeah. But it's nice and busy. And I'm, you know, I love doing this. I love having fun. Yeah. I love going on podcasts and talking about all this random shit like this.
Yeah, man.
And so you'll see me around just doing lots of random things.
I was talking to Victoria about this last week. Like, you have got to, like, obviously you've been doing it longer than me and you're on TV and doing stuff. Do you have to have those moments where you have to really sit there and go, this is brilliant what I'm doing here. I'm enjoying this. This is fun. This is
absolutely. Yeah. When I started doing comedy, I had no, I didn't know anything about comedy.
Yeah.
I didn't. The only comedians I knew were Mickey Flanagan, Michael McIntyre, a bit of Kevin Bridges, Paul Chowdhury.
I'm pretty similar, as in, I just thought there was like comedy. And like Live at the Apollo was like, sort of like, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I didn't realize these little pubs with loads of hundreds of people. I didn't realize. I had no concept.
I had no concept of it. Yeah. I had no ambitions to become a comedian.
Yeah.
That was, I just wanted to do it because it was like something to do.
Yeah.
I had no idea that 8 years down the line, I would have had a body of work on TV. That's insane.
That's mad.
So, and particularly when you come from, in my case, you know, come from an immigrant background like my dad. I've seen how hard these people work. You've seen how hard your dad has had to work when you're from a working class background to make ends meet. The fact that I can get on stage, tell a couple of gags and get paid whatever I get paid to do it, that's fucking mental.
That is brilliant, isn't it?
So
it's good that you look at it like that.
I love every second, even this, just coming here, talking to you to do this. I don't have to worry about it. Because I know I've got other gigs, I'm going to get paid, whatever.
Yeah.
There are people who can't at 2:30, there's no way they can spend an hour just talking about the time they shat themselves.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So to me, it's a complete privilege to do this. I enjoy myself every single time, and there's a lot of comedians who take this way too seriously.
I have to... Because I was saying last week, I had a little break from this because I was getting a bit too intense with it. I was acting more out of desperation than fun. It was like, oh, I've got to become a... successful comedian, and it's like, this ain't fucking fun. What am I doing? I'm making this a shit. So I had to take a step back, and now I have to be conscious of it. Like, you know, if something doesn't go my way or something, then I'm wary of slipping back into that thing where I'm making it shit. It's a good thing, man.
It's a great thing. Audiences will find you, and audiences will enjoy you more if you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
And that's all I've ever done. I've never had a grand plan. I've never set targets. I never set Live at the Apollo as a target.
Yeah,
I didn't do it. I was just like, I just want to get good at this and enjoy myself every time I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And I know me that I enjoy things more the better I get at them.
Yeah,
that's just the way I.
Well, there's that thing in there of like input and output variables. Like all you are control of is what you can do.
Yeah,
you can't say I want to be on Live at the Apollo because it's not your choice.
It's not my choice. Yeah. Absolutely, there's so many moving parts and whatever.
Yeah,
and you know, I'm very, very happy. Touch wood. Of where my career has got to. And if someone said to me today, you can't do this anymore, I'd miss it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I love it. It's the best job I've ever had. Yeah. I've done very serious jobs. I've done jobs in the city where I go into work at 6:30 in the morning and leave at 2 in the morning just working.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, you get paid a lot of money, but it's a shift.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be anonymous in an office anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel every day when I'm doing 3 gigs in London tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I think to myself, I'm a part of someone's evening.
Yeah.
In London, one of the biggest cities in the world, there might be some people who've travelled here who've gone, I went to London one time, and when I went that one time, I saw this comedian called Ishan Akbar.
Yeah.
What a privilege that
is. Brilliant, isn't it? Because even before you start, you have to look at stages and people say, oh, imagine doing that. And I am doing it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't. I think you got to fucking appreciate it.
Yeah,
100%. I'm doing the thing. Do you know what I mean?
Last week, I organised a fundraiser at the Hackney Empire.
Yeah, man.
For the Pakistan flood relief, I had 16 comedians, people like Milton Jones, Paul Chowdhury, turning up. And that was one moment where I just looked back, I saw a sold-out Hackney Empire. They didn't come for me. I didn't sell it out, but they, you know, we did it for the benefit. But I was like, I was able to call in favours from these people, who I've seen on telly in the past, were at the sold-out Hackney Empire, and I'm in a position in my career where I can do a fundraiser for fun.
Yeah.
What?
Brilliant.
What a privilege. So I absolutely love this job. I love talking on podcasts. I love meeting people like you.
But you generally seem like a, like you're, what's the word, level, like put together. You're not, you said you don't get embarrassed, that sort of stuff. And what would you give advice to people, how to be more like chilled with it, how to sort of just enjoy it? Do you know how to, because you seem pretty, you don't seem to be stressed out about much.
No, I'm not. And if you, do you know what it is? Like you're in your 30s, you've got a kid as well.
Yeah.
So you're in a much more mature place in your life than I am. Like I'm 38, kidless, I don't have the same kind of responsibility. The only thing I'll say to anybody who's in this industry or wants to, do not give a fuck about anyone else. Other than the thing that you want to serve, whatever you want to do. And I talked to you about this earlier. Yeah. I don't care if other comedians like me or not.
Yeah.
I do not care if there's comedians watching this who think I'm not funny. Because you're not buying tickets, my tickets.
Yeah.
I don't care whether comedians are in the green room saying, we love Ishan Akbar. Don't give a fuck about you.
Yeah.
I'll be your friend. I'll hang out with you. Yeah. I love a lot of comedians. Some of my best friends are comedians. I don't care about them. What I care about is entertaining the audience in front of me.
That's your job, isn't it?
That's my job. Yeah, yeah. That is it.
Yeah.
Because you're a floor layer.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether another floor layer says you're a good floor layer. The customer has to say they did a good job.
Yeah, yeah.
It's as simple as that. So that's one thing I'd say. The second thing is, so much of this industry is so out of your hands. It does not matter how funny you are. There are so many stories of people in the past who are brilliant comedians who just didn't get the breaks that they should have deserved on TV or whatever.
Yeah.
Commissioners, all these people, not all of them know what they're doing all the time.
Yeah.
I interviewed once the first ever, the founder of Netflix, and he said, I went to 100 different people who all said, this will never work.
Yeah.
So no one knows what they're doing. Yeah. Even in commissioners who might see this.
Yeah.
Because they want to pay their mortgages. Yeah. So they're just going to do whatever their business needs them to do. So if you just stay true to the thing that you want to do, your audiences will find you and they'll just love what you're doing. And then you can just say, you know what? This is what I want from my life. Because doing this at all and getting paid for it, you're in the top 1% already.
That's quality, isn't it? And I suppose that advice, well, spreads into every aspect, isn't it? As long as you're doing you.
You keep doing you, doing you, and it will come. Mickey Flanagan, one of my favorite comedians, he took his debut up to the Fringe after 14 years. 14 years he was in the game. Solid hour he would have had. 14 years.
Yeah.
And there are people who will say, I've been doing this 4 or 5 years. I should be a star. Why?
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
That's it, man.
Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't a star at 18. He was a star in his mid-20s, but he'd been playing football since he was 6.
Yeah.
It took 20 years.
And that's it. And that's what it's about, the process, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's that thing. It's just enjoy. It's that thing. Like someone was saying, don't think of something as a journey, but more like a piece of music. You don't want a piece of music. You're not waiting for the end of it.
Yeah.
The journey, you're waiting to get to an end.
Yeah.
So just fucking enjoy it.
Just enjoy it. Because life is unpredictable. My mum died 8 years ago. She was 54 in the space of a week.
Yeah.
And so you just never know. So if you're sitting there getting bitter about, I need this, I need that, and you're wasting your own time.
Fucking brilliant. Well, that was a poignant place to leave the podcast.
There we are.
That was brilliant.
I can do serious sometimes.
There you go. Do you want to plug? Oh, you plugged your tour.
Plugged my tour.
Instagram, what's your Instagram?
Instagram at Ishan Akbar.
Yeah.
And sorry to the girl I plugged.
Literally.
I literally plugged her and then covered myself. Hey, I was 21.
Right. It's been lovely.
Thank you, Ishan. Cheers, mate. Right. See you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.